Hello, and welcome to the Developing Mountain Biking in Scotland podcast. My name is Graham McLean. I'm the head of Developing Mountain Biking in Scotland. Today's podcast, I think you're going to find a fascinating insight into how mountain bikers in Scotland, supported by organisations, are working with land managers, with national parks, to really look to make mountain biking even better in Scotland, and also to help preserve and enhance the environment for one of our probably national species, the capercaillie. I think you'll find the podcast really interesting. We've got a couple of really inspiring speakers who I walk about the forest in the Cairngorms with. One is Douglas Cartrey, who works for the Cairngorms National Park Authority, and the other is Emma Holgate, who's the chair of the Badenoch and Strathspey Trails Association, and also senior instructor at Glenmore Lodge. In the podcast today, we take a wander around the woods that was planned to have a new set of trails built on it, and we discuss that through the podcast. In the time from doing the recording the podcast before Christmas and doing this intro just at the end of January, the woods that we were walking around have suffered the effects of one of our big storms we've had. And unfortunately, the woods have took it really hard, and a lot of them have came down, and the woods have came down. So the trail that was planned in there is now on hold for that as a site. And I know that the group, ourselves and Rory, and the Cairngorm National Park Authority are really working hard with Forestry and Land Scotland to see if there's an alternative site for the trail to go in. That relationship is working well, and could be a really great example of partnership working together to really find good common solutions, even in the face of adversity such as storms. So watch this space, and we'll give you more information on that on all the DNBNS channels as that project develops. Also, at the end of the podcast, we give a number of thanks to a lot of different people who have been involved with the capercaillie project. One of the ones actually is a listen back to the podcast as well. One of the people that we didn't mention but has been hugely influential and a massive supporter has been the project lead behind the capercaillie project within the national park. Callan Robertson deserves a massive thanks from our side, and it's been a real joy and a pleasure to be working with her. Our approach has always to involve people in the solutions, to look for common practical solutions to make the lives of the humans who live in the National Cup Park better, but also the lives of the capercaillie birds and other species within the National Park. Always approaching this with a friendly smile and attitude. Also like to pay a massive thanks to the staff within Forestry and Land Scotland. And from our side, one of the people we've been really engaging with is John Ireland, who is a Health and Safety and Wellbeing Officer within Forestry and Land Scotland. John has been really proactive in helping us push this project forward and looking at alternative solutions as well. I really hope that partnership has been really useful and will continue to be. So thanks. In addition, do we also thank in the podcast, and you'll hear that towards the end, a massive thanks to Carolyn and John. Anyway, I'll let you go on to the more interesting bits, which is Douglas and Emma's introductions and podcasts. So, but I'm sure you'll enjoy this. And as always, give it a like and a share so we can increase the reach and spread the good word around what mountain bikers are doing in Scotland and beyond. Bye. Hello, I'm Graham McLean. I'm the head of Developing Mountain Biking in Scotland. Today, I'm delighted to be in the beautiful Cairngorms, out for a stroll with a couple of really inspiring and interesting people. I'm going to get them to introduce themselves, especially Douglas, as I have a history of pronouncing his last name wrong. But we'll start off with Emma. Emma, can you just introduce yourself to our listeners?
So I am Emma Holgate. I live in Kingussie, and I have done for the past 4 years. And previous to that, I was over on the West Coast in Fort William. I have a role as a senior instructor at Glenmore Lodge, which is Scotland's national outdoor training centre. And I am also the chairperson for the local trail association. So that is me currently. And my past is I've always been in the outdoors from a very young age. My first memory of riding a bike was my stabilizers coming off and running over my granny. So I definitely still crash and have always crashed. So I've raced in my time, cross country and enduro style at amateur level throughout Scotland and a bit in Europe. And I have gone through the leadership awards and then become a British cycling tutor to deliver the leadership awards as well. So play quite a big part within the national governing body now.
Yeah, awesome. And thanks very much for taking the time today to speak with us and as well. And yeah, I think you kind of and a bit of your history and background there as well, of kind of riding bikes in Scotland and getting inspired and then coming through and being a tutor as well. And just, I guess, what do you think as well? What's the particular kind of crossover from your role in Glenmore Lodge, being kind of senior instructor there and getting people out on bikes and training people to get people out on bikes, and your role in the Trails Association as well?
I think I see my biggest role as sort of education and passing on those sort of really important messages of being sympathetic to where we're riding, how we're riding, who we're riding with and past other users. And so it's just getting that key message across, and both roles do that.
Yeah, and also today we're joined by Douglas Cartrey. Let's have a go and see if actually you can see his second name again and see if I have got that right.
Yeah, you got that right, Graham. Douglas Cartrey. I'm the Badenoch and Strathspey Trail Development Coordinator, which is my role with the Cairngorms Capercaillie project through the Cairngorms National Park Authority. And yeah, similarly to Emma, I've been riding bikes for quite a long time, starting out in Highland Perthshire, where I grew up, kind of being kicked out the door into the woods with my bike and being told to be back in time for dinner. From there, progressed into some cross-country racing, starting out at Lagan Wolf Tracks with a race when I was around about 7 years old, which then carried on cross-country racing in Scotland and some other parts of Britain until I was around about 16 and I could afford my own enduro bike and got into the enduro racing scene, racing in Scotland and then further afield with what was then the Enduro World Series. I then studied geography at Inverness College. So I did my geography degree up there, getting out and riding my bike a lot, and was fortunate enough in that to get a funded research trip to head out to British Columbia on the west coast of Canada and see what they were doing with their trail associations, their trails, and managing visitors to those trails. And that kind of sparked my interest, or continued my interest, in the environmental side of mountain biking. And then when I finished studying in 2020, I was fortunate enough to get a role with the Cairngorms Capercaillie project as a trail mapping intern, starting that role at the start of 2021, which leads me into my current role as the trail development coordinator, or my role that's about to finish, working alongside the local trail association and the local mountain biking community.
Yeah, quite a lot in there for us to unpack a wee bit, but especially one bit I think you mentioned as well, where you were studying at University of Highlands and Islands, is that up in Inverness, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And then as part of that, you managed to get a funded place to go ride your bike and look at trails and examine what they're doing right and what we can learn from our friends in Canada and British Columbia.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough in 2018 to get awarded the Dick Balhari Prize, which is through the National Trust for Scotland, which is a research fund. And I used that money to go to Canada, go to British Columbia, and chat to the trails associations out there, as well as the local government, trail builders, and the riding community, and see what they were doing that we could possibly do here in Scotland. So learning a lot about trail construction, how they fund themselves, and how they work with the local government there to allow themselves to build trails, which came out of the risk of the trails being closed. The mountain bike community got together, formed their trail associations so they could keep the trails open. And then bringing that knowledge back, writing it up, and then being fortunate enough to present it at the Scottish Mountain Bike Conference just along the road in Aviemore here in 2018.
Yeah, no, it's kind of just going to dig a little bit more into that Canadian experience, Douglas, a little bit. I think it's super interesting. And I think that there's actually quite a lot of parallels, I think, with Scotland in terms of, you know, we mentioned trails associations formed at the risk of their trails getting closed. But, you know, at that 2018 conference, there was a guide for unauthorised trails, which was launched. And that was actually as a reaction to some, you know, fairly alarming papers from Scottish Land Estates, unfortunately Land Scotland, who were really concerned at the level of unauthorised trail building that was going on in Scotland. And I think that guide has helped form trails associations in Scotland. And I guess digging into that experience in Canada as well, what were the kind of learnings that you were taking from, that you took from Canada? And do you think that they are coming into Scotland now?
Yeah, so I've learned a lot out in British Columbia. A lot of it is how their trail associations work and how they fund themselves, and just the sheer number of volunteers that are needed to build sustainable trails, as well as how to build those sustainable trails. You know, we can't all ride loam trails all day every day; they just don't last. So, building sustainable but fun trails, but also looking at the funding aspect, how they fund themselves. So while they rely on this huge volunteer network to put in unpaid time, those that can volunteer, or maybe they can volunteer, but they also donate. So they have lots of donations coming in from locals on a monthly and a yearly basis to help maintain their local trail network, which we're starting to see more of in Scotland, which is really cool. But also how they maintain their trails with funded roles, building and maintaining new trails, getting machines in to do the bigger bits of work, to create those sustainable trails that are still enjoyable, still attracting people from all over the world, just like we're starting to do in Scotland. And some of those funded roles, just like we've now seen through developing mountain biking in Scotland, which is, again, really, really cool to see what's been done over there being brought into Scotland, because they've had a few years more than us. They've been at it for probably 10 years before the first rail association formed here in Scotland.
Yeah, there's definitely learnings there as well, I think, in terms of that kind of volunteers and building it up as well, and building up the community, both in terms of capacity of people to dig, so number of volunteers we have, and also the kind of people donating in and finances, and a sense of community going there. And I mean, how do you think that those sort of things are progressing with Badenoch and Strathspey Trails Association?
I think it's huge, and it's really important in my sort of riding life here, living here, is that community of shop owners and being able to drop into some of the local shops and ask questions about, oh, what's so-and-so's trail like at the moment, and have you heard about what's going on in certain areas? We've got so many landowners as well, and that's become very much part of our community, working with the landowners. And the Trail Association just glues it all together, and bringing the youngsters in, the racers locally into the scene as well, of trying to just organise things and do it as effectively as possible and as conservatively as possible towards everyone and everything that might get impacted from a new trail or an existing trail getting overused, etc. So community's massive.
Yeah, and I think, you know, community is massive and kind of integrating into all of those different bits that you mentioned as well. And I think that probably brings us on a bit into the Trail Feathers project, which Douglas should be working for and funded by as well, and opposed in Bannockburn Trails, you know, right at the heart of as well. So going to go to Douglas, actually, just to give us a bit of an introduction to the Trail Feathers project and what it is and what it's trying to achieve.
Yeah, so the Trail Feathers project has come about from the Cairngorms Capper Cayley project, and it's basically involving the whole of the mountain bike community, the Trail Association, land managers and conservationists all getting together and making sure we're doing the right thing.
And the Capper Cayley.
Yeah, the Capper Cayley are involved heavily. Yeah, so it's bringing everyone around the same table, and, you know, learning from one another. Mountain biking's a rapidly developing sport, so a lot of land managers aren't really sure about what it is. You know, it's come a long way since they had the world champs here riding around the woods of Rothiemarcus on fire roads on fully rigid bikes. Things have changed a lot, so keeping them up to speed with what's going on and what mountain bikers are looking for, but also a lot of mountain bike community and everyone else learning from land managers and conservationists about what's actually going on the ground and how we as mountain bikers can impact that.
Yeah, and I guess mentioning the Capper Cayley project as well, and why is a project being set up to help Capper Cayley?
So Capper Cayley are, well, they're now a critically endangered species. So unfortunately, there's only a few hundred of them left in the UK, and, well, actually in Scotland. They're all up here in Scotland, with the vast majority of them being here in Badenoch and Strathspey. And Capper Cayley is the largest species of grouse. So they're pretty big. They're kind of bigger than a turkey, and they can be vicious. There's plenty of incidents of rogue Capper Cayley attacking mountain bikers in the past. Thankfully, we don't see much of that now. But if you're lucky enough to see one, you'll probably get a big fright. They're the jumbo jets of the bird world. They're pretty impressive animals. And they just happen to frequent the same forests that mountain bikers do, or rather, mountain bikers frequent the same forests that Capper Cayley live in, which is that sort of nice, open Scots pine woodland, with a bit of blaberry on the ground, maybe some rocky features, which is also the ideal habitat for mountain bikers to live, with their gnarly trails.
And yeah, so the project was set up, I guess, to look at trying to create the right environments for Capper Cayley to begin to flourish again in this area.
Yeah, so the project has looked at where mountain bike trails are. It was my first role was to map all the mountain bike trails in the area, and look at where Capper Cayley were, and what sort of thing we could do to help both users of the forest, and to help Capper Cayley and create some more habitat for them, reduce disturbance, but also create a better mountain bike trail network. So Capper Cayley generally quite like being left alone in the woods. They're not a fan of being disturbed, and being disturbed irregularly is one of the biggest issues. So riding a trail, an obscure trail in the middle of nowhere, once a month causes much more disturbance than, you know, riding a well-used trail that's getting daily use. And that disturbance is pretty significant. It's like giving them a big fright. So imagine you're just sitting down in your living room watching TV, and someone comes smashing through your window and runs through your house. You're gonna get a pretty big fright, and that might stay with you for a little while. You might be stressed out for the next day or so. But if we do that to Capper Cayley, if we come crashing through their home, which is the forest, they're going to flush. So they're going to fly off as fast as possible and try and escape what's just come crashing through their forest. And they're used to being hunted, so there's lots of things that will eat a capercaillie, and they don't know that we're not about to try and munch on them for our dinner. So they'll fly off, and that stress will stay with them for a few days. They don't recover very quickly. And if you're a capercaillie that's trying to protect its young and raise some chicks, or just doing your capercaillie thing, feeding on some pine needles, that's pretty scary. That can cause a lot of damage. So it's kind of why it's really important for us as mountain bikers to be involved in the conservation world here in the Cairngorms, and make sure that where our trails are is they're in the right place, and where new trails are built is also in the right place. So we're not taking away from anything else that's living in the forest, but also providing that larger trail network that we're seeing be developed in Scotland.
No, that's great. And in terms of, so we're looking to try and create the right trail in the right place. And I guess central to that, though, is actually working out where mountain bikers in the community want to ride and want to be a part of as well. And then matching that up to land managers. Is that a fair assessment of where it wants to go, and environmentalists as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose a lot of our meetings have been around trying to work out where the best place is to ride with all the considerations in place. And I think one thing I just wanted to, I thought about there and want to highlight is that it's not just the capercaillie. Although this project is focused very much on the capper, it helps so many other species. So this is a project that can transfer throughout Scotland, throughout all different countries as well. So I know there's other places that will definitely consider the conservation aspect of things, but we have learned a lot through this project, and it's really sort of forced us to make considerations and make it a priority. And it hasn't been onerous. It's actually, you know, come out with a lot of positives, and we're going to end up with new trails to ride, and we've given back trails to the capper that just don't get ridden, but we've made an effort to make sure they don't get ridden again in the future. So yeah, I'm lost with where we were now. I went off on a tangent.
No. I think you're on the right place. I mean, I think that's what we want to look at as well. And you mentioned there that you've learned a lot of things through the process as well. Just looking to dig into a bit of detail in there, is there sort of key things that you think that spring to mind that really come out of the whole project for you as an individual and also as part of the Trails Association?
I think as an individual, it's just been getting to know so many different people who aren't just mountain bikers, the conservationists in the area, the land managers, and then it's those relationships that have been built. I think that's just massive for the Trail Association. Our strength in numbers is what makes things happen, and that's not just Trail Association members, it's the community, it's the land managers who have got to be all on board. So I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, great. And you also mentioned before that the kind of positive outcomes there. Do you want to give us an overview of where you think the real positives are and through the whole process?
So some of the positives, well, we have got new trails that are being built, and they wouldn't have been as quick or as easy to have happened without the project. And also we've had what's called the Trail Academy start and happen, and Douglas was a big part of that, so I'll let him tell you a little bit more. But we've got new tools, we've got a motorised wheelbarrow, we've had some just real good expertise who I don't think are going to disappear on us, although they've had paid positions to support us. I think in the future, they're still going to be there for us as well. And so it's just, again, back to that linking in relationships. And it's been really important to move projects forwards.
Yeah, no, that's good. And so we'll dig into a few of those bits as well, including the bit of the process of developing new trails. But you mentioned a trail academy there, which is a really exciting initiative. And I think we're really seeing more and more of these happen across Scotland, where we're really trying to bring the next generation into trail building, but in a considered way as well. And Douglas, you've been really involved in the trail academy process.
Yeah, so the Trail Academies have been a series of youth dig days, so aimed at young riders in the area aged between 12 and 18, so getting them out on the ground. I've had five sessions, I think, with a few at High Burnside, Laggan and in Granton-on-Spey. And it's just aimed at getting these younger riders who are starting to pick up tools and head off out into the woods, providing them with the knowledge of how to build a trail properly, how to reduce the issues that we've seen with some of the informal trails in the area. And it's kind of been born out of an issue that one of the local land managers had with a lot of wood being brought into the forest to build, you know, North Shore features, which, you know, if you've ever ridden in North Shore, they're pretty good fun to ride, but the wood that we've got here just doesn't stand up to our Scottish weather. It tends to fall to bits, and, you know, if we're using nails and things, it doesn't agree with a lot of forest machinery. It causes a huge headache for the land managers, both in terms of liability and in terms of potentially damaging their equipment. So bringing these younger riders that are about to start their trail building journey and providing them with the means or the know-how of how to build a trail and maintain it, and getting them involved with the Trail Association and kind of showing off our relationship with land managers. You know, it's not just a case of heading out into the woods with a shovel and going for it. It's quite a lengthy process to make sure we're doing the right things in the right places. But yeah, getting them out into the woods, getting their hands dirty, with a professional trail builder. So we were lucky enough to get Ronan Taylor in for a few days between his project in Fort William and Cairngorm Mountain to really head up the sessions and show off how to build a trail properly. And he passed a huge amount of knowledge onto these young riders of the real methodology of building a trail. And plus there's a lot of trail building knowledge within the volunteer community within BASTA. Really we needed that professional to the outsider to provide the context and really, really hone in these young builders' skills. And you know, I learned a lot throughout the process as well. It wasn't just the kids that were learning. Volunteers got a lot out of it as well. Not just the cake that's at most dig days in the country, but also providing sandwiches and things just to make the day as easy as possible for anyone coming along. And get some appropriate sized tools as well, so making sure we had all the right kit with funding from the Capercaillie project. And yeah, making sure these younger riders know how to build a trail sustainably and know that they're welcome to come along to our dig days.
I mean, just adding on to that is we hope that this will progress and build. And one thing that stood out and we talked about at a meeting was it was a group of young boys, wasn't it? And so it's my mission to try and get a few girls out and maybe work with the local high schools and really sort of push that the girls can do it too, just as an added little thing there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, it's... you know, great and great to hear that. That would be great as well. Getting more females into and girls into the trail building scene would be really beneficial, because diversity always gives us breadth and new insights as well. And also, I think the development of trail building education and bringing it into high schools and bringing the young people is hugely exciting, because I can imagine, and you'll have seen it firsthand, you know, what did you think the impact was on the young people? And secondly, what were the transferable skills, do you think, that they were learning that they could take to other industries?
Yeah, absolutely. So quite a few of the young riders that we had along are interested in pursuing a career in trail building. And yeah, there's not really a set way to go about that at the moment. So I think one of them was off to study forestry. But yeah, there's a lot of transferable skills in there, thinking about how to work safely. You know, the fact that we had to do a risk assessment and a dynamic risk assessment as well, and showing the younger riders that this is all part of the process, you know, doing a toolbox talk of how to use trail tools safely, really important. But also how to work together. We had some kids that really took the lead, and others that were just happy to you know, crack on and get the trail done. Which was really, really good to see. Everyone worked really well together. You know, lots of learning and lots of transferable skills as well. But also bringing the younger riders together. Some of them hadn't ridden with each other before, didn't even know who the kid next to them was because they went to a different high school. So it was really cool to bring these younger riders together in the same place, with the same goal. And they all got on really well and just made the day what it was. And yeah, got some really cool sections of trail that are, you know, everyone can ride now, and you can say, oh, I built that. And it was at one of the Trail Academy sessions that I did it.
Yeah, that's super cool. And I think it's certainly something that we're really, really interested in developing in Scotland, with a couple of potentially a kind of SQE course of mountain biking with trail building. One of the modules we're looking at that. We're also working with partners over in Europe as part of our DUC project, a college course in Norway. And we're exploring how we can maybe linked with a new college course in Bentonville, Arkansas, USA. So lots happening in that space, and it's going to be really interesting to see. And I think, because it is, like you say, Douglas, it's about the trails and trail building, but it's actually also about how we can get a real pathway into good jobs for young people as well, and give them lots of transferable skills that say there. And, you know, I guess with your role as in Glenmore Lodge as well as senior instructor, you'll see that a bit as well.
Yeah, definitely. Having some depth to your sport and some understanding of everything around that sport, I think, is so important. And for me, working in the industry, I feel it's a part of what I should be doing, is helping make trails more sustainable for the use of my groups, as well as tourists and the local community. So I think it's very important for the young riders to understand and be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to introduction a bit later on. But one of the other things we mentioned a bit before was about putting in some new trails, but also kind of sacrificing some trails that were in some sensitive areas or weren't being well enough used or undergoing failing and things as well. But how, like, I guess I'm quite kind of interested in the community's reaction to that as well, because there's quite a lot of nervousness around losing trails. Is that something you felt here, and how have the group and the projects managed to navigate that?
Yeah, massively. And on a personal level, I felt it myself. You know, there was trails suggested and they were some of my favourite trails in the area. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And so, you know, it was having an open dialogue. It was compromise. It was coming to agreement and really studying the map. And Douglas's work that he did was a big part of that, studying trail forks, you know, talking to the land managers and seeing what they use and don't use. And so, yeah, it was a sensitive topic at times and got quite heated in some meetings for sure. But yeah, we got there in the end, and I don't think we ruffled too many feathers, literally.
Yeah, I think we managed to keep everyone pretty happy. A lot of apprehension maybe coming into the Trail Feathers project, particularly from outside of those that were maybe in meetings, of, you know, a real nervousness that we were going to lose a lot of trails. And that's not what it was about. It was about making sure the right trails were in the right places and not decreasing the trail network at all. And we've succeeded in that. We've removed a few sections of trail that, to be honest, weren't really that great to begin with. Being a bit boggy and horrible, which is really important habitat for species like Capercaillie, and, you know, rerouting what is called the top trail at High Burnside, out of a bog and into the woods, but still retaining what is quite a gnarly climb. You know, it's used by people like Emma to test guides' abilities. Can they climb up this rough climb? Which is, that is, you know, it was an iconic section, so having to recreate something that is as difficult was definitely a challenge, but I think we've succeeded in doing that. You know, maybe a little bit of pushback from those that rode the same trail every day, but you know, things change, trails change. You know, it could easily have been some trees that fell down on it. But we've now created a more sustainable, longer lasting climb that is hopefully equally as difficult.
I think equally there's been a lot of learning from these meetings, because we've had conservationists in these meetings, and by giving back just small sections of trail that we don't really think much about actually open up massive habitat advantages to some species. So that realization and that knowledge has been really valuable for us to go, oh right, okay, that's the impact we could have by just not riding there. So yeah, really good learning.
Yeah, that's great. And I think as well, you kind of, I guess you must have looked at some of the areas that people were riding in as well, and were looking to identify what gaps there was in the variety of trails within the area. Is that a fair thing that you've done as a part of this process?
Yeah, definitely a little bit. We were fighting over the mic there. We've definitely identified that, for example, High Burnside has got very few easy blue style routes, and so that is our project there just now, is a big blue route from the top that we've started. And then also in Feshy Bridge area, we're identified that we need to put in some more trails there, and we'll probably come on to that in a bit.
Yeah, Douglas, you're fighting over here. Here's your chance.
Yeah, so High Burnside being a really important place for mountain biking in the area and for Capper Cayley.
We're doing a wee, you know, island squish.
But also, yeah, as I say, a place that Capper Cayley lives. And yeah, we've been fortunate enough to work with the land manager, Seafield and Strathspey Estates. We've been really good. Have a long history of working with the mountain bike community, and we've built on that to, yeah, as Emma says, create a new blue graded trail, but in the right place. So pulling people away from the north of the woods, where Capper Cayley tend to hang out, and keeping them where the existing trail network is. And it wasn't just a case of drawing a line on the ground. Everything that we've done has really been put through the ringer. It's been passed around the National Park Office, and you know, Capper Cayley advisors from RSPB have looked at it and made sure that our plans are the right thing to do. So we've definitely got a firm footing that we're doing the right thing from everyone's perspective, not just mountain bikers and land managers.
Yeah, and we're just currently getting lost a bit in the woods here as well, and light's fading, but we should be all right, I think. We'll see by the end of the podcast whether we've made it back in time or not. But and you mentioned there you're putting in a new, so is that a new hand-built trail that's going in to High Burnside, is that right?
Yeah, so that's all hand-built. Lines being flagged out and cleared. And we've had two dig sessions on it. So our dig days at the moment are the second Sunday of every month. And yeah, we've had really good turnout. Lots of people are enthusiastic about getting a new trail in the ground. It's, you know, it's not the easiest work. We're not blessed with the Tweed Valley soil that some people have, some trail associations have. You know, we're working with a lot of roots and rocks in this area. But yeah, all hand-built, lots of volunteers showing up, getting stuck in and learning about why we're putting the trail in that place, why it is the right place for the trail. And yeah, of course, eating some cake as well.
Yeah, eating cake and creating community as well. And Emma, you've been happy with as well, like the Trails Association been happy with the reaction to putting in that trail?
Yeah, definitely. And I think our biggest advantage there is that the landowner is so obliging and so willing to work with us and to understand who we are and why we want to do it. We've had several meetings, and including one on site recently where we walked around the trails with them. And so they got a clear picture of what we wanted to do. I think it's been so well received, and that's years of work from folk way before I arrived in the area. So it's quite impressive, really, that relationship.
Yeah, and creating relationships is like, I think that's been mentioned quite a lot actually through all the chat as well, and I guess through the process as well. How do you think mountain bikers are now regarded? And what relationships do you have with other stakeholders as well?
I think that there was a little bit of shock around the table that from folk who weren't bikers going, oh, these people actually understand the environment a little bit and they want to protect these areas. And I think then they realise that, oh, we need to work with these folk to give them better understanding and they want to understand more. So it was so positive. And I think there is a big realization that we as mountain bikers want to look after where we live, where we ride, as much as a lot of other people.
Yeah, it's always came through in a lot of our surveys and a lot of things that we've been involved with. Actually, the main driver for mountain biking is that connection to nature and the spaces that we ride in as well. And we're actually just walking through a lovely bit of single track kind of historical path in Feshie Bridge, and this is going to be the location, or not necessarily right here, all right,
yeah.
Cool, of kind of some new trail here as well, is that?
Yeah, that's correct. We walked this earlier today, actually, just checking our plans and where we want to put new trails. And Douglas wasn't with us, but we're going to end up coming out onto this bit of existing path, and then it'll be going back along where we've just walked as an up. So it's going to come through some amazing woodland. It's going to be very mellow blue style trail from the top of a knoll that is 321 meters high, so 321, which is quite apt, quite good. But yeah, that's a big project that's kicking off.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, and I guess it's at the stage now where you're going to have a big fun day of putting in planning permissions and things to get this to happen. But going back in time into this as a project as well, how did you identify this as a place that could be suitable for a new trail?
So through the mapping work that I did in 2021, looking at where Capercaillie were through all the surveys that have been done in the past, way back to the 1980s, we've got data, and look at where mountain bikers were using already. So there are some existing trails here in Feshie Bridge, like the nice bit of sort of classic Cairngorm single track we're walking down now. And it's been identified as a good site because it's a good size. There's a little bit of elevation, and it's in the right place as well. As well as not really having any environmental constraints. So there's no Capercaillie in this section of woods, and actually there's not really any other protected species. So we found a golden gem in the Cairngorm. So much of this area is covered by SPAs and SSSIs, and this section isn't. The aim being to create, a nice accessible network of trails. We're not creating lag and wolf tracks. We're not going to have a humongous car park and a cafe and lots of trail signage. It's very much building on the style of trail that's already in the area, that flowing single track that's accessible to lots of different people. And it's already a place that people are riding through. It's within cycling distance from Aviemore and Kincraig. So there's not really a need for a big car park here. It's not somewhere you'd spend a whole day. you'd maybe spend a few hours here.
Yeah, it's great to hear that you have lots of local touch points, from the signage, from bike shops, our things as well. And I guess, Emma, with your role within Glenmore Lodge, education, on trails, what trails to use, but a wider response on mountain biking, we'll come into that as the National Outdoor Centre.
So the education piece within my role at Glenmore Lodge is huge. And, you know, working with the national governing body and making sure the awards that we deliver for leadership have got a big part of this piece in there. You know, how do we educate as many people as possible to ride our trails in a conservative and respectful, responsible way? We're almost like, it's like a food chain. You know, as a leader, you're speaking to your group, and what they hear is what they'll sometimes do. And so we've got to be speaking the right things and educating the right things. So when I'm educating leaders, I've also got to be giving them the right information. And I think to be part of this project and giving real current examples and information and passing on things I've learned is really valuable. And so I try to encourage as many folk as possible to get involved with trail associations and build their depth of knowledge around the sport.
Yeah, that's super cool. I mean, and I think going into kind of education and lessons, I guess, from this project, I mean, I think the Capricoli project and Trail Feathers, there's a real depth to it, which I think is completely needed within a national park and just such stunning area as well, and with such sensitive habitats. But is there lessons, do you think, that can be learned that can transfer across Scottish mountain biking?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously here in the Cairngorms, the environment's pretty special. There's a lot of considerations that we have, a lot of, I guess you could see them as hurdles, but a lot of opportunities as well. So yeah, a lot of our learning of, you know, partnership working across more than just mountain bikers to land managers is definitely transferable. We do see it in some other places where we've got trails that maybe aren't quite in the right place, but opening the door as mountain bikers into the conservation world, I think, is really important. There's a lot that we as mountain bikers can do, as well as, you know, to help preserve the very place that we enjoy riding. So I think opening those doors early on, that you want to have these discussions around conservation and any potential challenges we might face for mountain biking is really important. But yeah, a lot of our learning and a lot of our outcomes hopefully are transferable further afield, where there's maybe challenges and mountain bikers aren't taken so seriously. Hopefully that, you know, the film that will come out about the Trail Feathers project will show that mountain bikers can be taken seriously, and we're not just that bunch of hooligans riding around the woods on our bikes.
Yeah, because actually to make the whole environment and the places that we live in sustainable, we have to involve people and people's recreational habits. And as part of that, I think there's more and more a growing body of research around that as well. And integrating people into the places, but in the right places, is going to be such a huge part of the future. And I think people being organised and being organised as part of a community will also have a lot of value as well. And is that be fair to say that you've learnt that through this process?
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with everything being said there. And I was just thinking how it crosses over to all the other outdoor sports that happen. And, you know, it's a real example of how positive the trail associations are being. You look at sort of the mountaineering world and, you know, bolts being put on crags and how controversial that has been for so many years. We've got an incredible example here of how we're working so, so well. And for other sports to see that and recognise that it's all about working together, I think is a really important thing.
Yeah, and I think you're totally right in that. I think a big word that I have mentioned, and I think you mentioned a lot of times as well, is relationships, and actually taking the time to invest in those relationships and getting them right. So the model might not always be the same in terms of the depth of understanding that you guys have gone through, but actually forming up those trusting relationships will be hugely useful for making mountain biking trails sustainable and secure into the future, and also putting in the variety of trail network they want to do so that more people can sustainably enjoy the sport.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's going to be an endless task, isn't it? It's something that we have got to commit to, and that is life within the sport.
Yeah, no, brilliant to see. And it's going to be, you can really see as well, smiles on faces, people going past. That's us December here, and everybody wrapped up, warm, but out enjoying the trails, and they'll have better experiences to enjoy in the future. And I think it's due to your guys' work. Yeah, and just as we get ready to finish up, your two of you have been really pivotal people within it, but I can imagine a project of this scale, it needs wider support, Emma. So just wondering if there's anyone you'd like to thank through the process as well, with, and I'm sure there's lots more, don't feel too bad if you forget anyone as well. It's pressure, it's real pressure on this one. But anyone you'd like to thank through the process?
Massive thanks to Rory Watt, who's our developing mountain biking in Scotland contact. He's put in a huge amount of effort getting things off the ground and helping us build those relationships. I think there's too many people to thank. The people at the Trail Association have definitely put in a lot of effort. The land managers that we've worked with, thanks for taking things seriously and getting on board with the project.
We're never gonna remember everyone here, but because it has been such a big pool of people, and you know, myself included, you come into the project, you do a bit of work, you come out because time won't allow you to. So you know, it almost feels wrong that it's me speaking here, because you know, so many people have put so many bits of effort in, and that's what's brought it all together. So it's a massive thank you to a huge crew of folk. And there's going to be a film coming out shortly, and that's been made by Katrina Brown. And that will really showcase a lot of people who have been involved as well. And it's still going on, and there's still people contributing massively to it. So yeah, it's a huge thanks. And thanks for Graham for taking the time to come and talk to us about it all.
Nah, no problem at all. It's been hugely enjoyable and great to see it from the start and the initiations. We were looking at a bike plan for the area, seeing how this has developed as well. And the Cairn Gorms project has been a big part of actually funding Rory Watt as our Highland Coordinator's role as well. So we really wouldn't have had the benefits that Rory's had of overseeing so many amazing projects through the Highlands if it wasn't for this project as well. So the amount of wins we've had from this is huge. And I think we've got an example from the project that isn't just local. I think it's got the opportunity for it to be a bit global as well. There's lessons here that can be spread around a lot of different places. So yeah, thank you both for so much time for in the project, and also for today as well. Listeners won't know that this is actually our second time recording this podcast, I made a mistake pressing the wrong button on the way in, so we had an hour of chat which you'll never hear or know anything about. It was gold, but I'm sure you've all enjoyed this gold as well. So please, if you've enjoyed this, give it a like and a share. Tell your friends about it, and that'll help spread the message further.